Arizona. Take off your rainbow shades and have another look at the world. It's time for the SAFTAcast, the only podcast that talks to writers, editors, and publishers about everything except writing, editing, or publishing. I'm your host, Scott C. Welcome to episode 57. It feels like it's been a while since I've talked to you. Has it been? It certainly feels like it to me, but I am here now with my chainsaw voice, ready to talk to you once again and talk to you about many a thing I have to do indeed. Phrasing really odd, just go with it. As always, I like to start off the show with a little bit of Sundress news for ya. And indeed, if you've been paying attention to Sundress Publications, then you know about what is coming at you this weekend. And of course, I am speaking about Cocktails and Creative Writing. It is the second time of one of the most popular workshops that Sundress Academy has ever had. It is a wonderful afternoon at Firefly Farms, the home of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. This Saturday, August 6th, from 4 to 7, you'll have the opportunity to look at the ties that are between alcohol, writing, and writers, also the ties that bind alcohol and the artist, and they go much, much deeper, believe it, than just epic stories of drinking or short stories or the legends. In this workshop, you're going to have the chance to learn how to make and then enjoy at least three classic cocktails while discussing the writers and works that are most associated with those cocktails, and then you'll be working on your own work, generating new material, or perhaps editing some stuff. And for an additional couple dollars if you sign up, you can stay around for an awesome home-cooked meal by Aaron Elizabeth Smith. But wait a second. Scott C., you're saying that sounds good and everything, but there's one piece of information you forgot to tell us. Who's going to be leading this workshop? Well, it just happens to be a former guest here on SAFTAcast and a person who knows about his spirits and everything, the one and the only, Sam Slaughter, will be there in attendance leading the workshop and discussing these cocktails. And if you're familiar with Sam's work, then you know he's got the credentials to talk about this topic in many different ways. So I encourage you, that is this Saturday, August 6th, from 4 to 7 p.m., for information on how you can be a part of this and get your tickets in, visit sundresspublications.com and click on Store. You'll see it there under Workshops. Of course, there's much more you can get in the store, such as any number of awesome Sundress titles, including one by our guest today. But we'll get to that in a second, because I just want to say one more thing about Sundress Publications, and that is, for all of the information, for the most information, one of the most reliable sources of information about Sundress Publications, you can always follow them on Facebook by searching Sundress Publications, and you will find it in your search bar. Click on them, give them a like, you will find a lot of useful information, not only just about workshops coming up, but deadlines for contests and events. You'll also find some great articles, as well as keep up with Sundress authors and publications that we are fond of and are fond of us, etc. So much to check out. Visit Sundress Publications on Facebook. Now, today's interview, it just happens to be with, as I implied a moment ago, a Sundress author. The one and the only Kristen Latour is here with us on the program. As you'll hear at the start and end of this interview, there was another interview recorded, but for technical difficulties that we still do not understand, that interview was not recorded. However, Kristen was so gracious and gave us some more time out of her busy schedule to come back and join us for a quote-unquote another interview, which we are happy to bring you today. And just tell you something, folks, Kristen is an amazing person and a wonderful person to chat with. I know you're going to love this interview, and I've talked your ear off enough. Let's get to the interview right now. On second thought, let's get to it in about 31 seconds, because you got to have the theme song first. Kristen?
Hello!
Hey. Listen, I'm really sorry about what happened with the last episode.
It's fine. Stuff like that happens, you know, it happens.
I'm glad you could take the time to come back and join us again.
Absolutely. No problem. I'm in a different part of my house now, though, so my bird might tweet once in a while.
That's all good.
Okay.
So, there we go.
Yes, she's going to participate.
Almost on cue.
Yeah, wasn't that weird?
What kind of bird is it?
She is a Dutch blue peached-faced lovebird.
That's a mouthful for a name.
It is. So she looks like a regular lovebird, except that she's blue where she would be green on a regular lovebird.
How long have you had her?
Never good at remembering these things. Four years now? 3 or 4 years that we've had her. She's a rescue. She was at an elementary school, and things went wrong, and so we brought her to live with us. So she's not terribly tame, but she's very friendly.
Hmm. Do you have many birds, or was this one your first one?
Oh, no. I've had birds since... My mom had birds when I was in high school, and then when I got my first apartment, I couldn't have any cats or dogs or anything, but they had no rules against birds. So my mom bought me a parakeet in 1994, and I had her for years. She lived a nice long time, not as long as she could have, but I think she died in 2002. So she made it to 2002, and in the meantime, we had a cockatiel that kind of overlapped with her, and then we had another cockatiel we rescued that overlapped, and then, was that it? Cockatiels, lovebirds, and a parakeet. That's it.
It's like a nice little aviary, though.
It is. It's been pretty constant. We have only been birdless for like a few months in our entire... I say we, my husband and I, have had birds the entire time that we've known each other, except for a few months. They're fun.
What's so fun about having birds?
Well, they eat your books and they shit on things.
Well, that can be fun, yeah.
It can be. It's a constant challenge to keep them off of books and not pooping on your stuff, which is fun.
Do they poop on the books?
Yes, we still find poop on our books once in a while from the past birds. This bird doesn't get out and fly around a whole lot, but we still find poop from the older birds on books and things that we haven't pulled off the shelves in a while.
Like a nice little memento.
Yes, it is. It's kind of like, oh, look, it's crap from our old birds. How sweet. And then you flick it off and, you know, whatever. But they're fun. They sing. Lovebirds are not very good at mimicking, but we taught the parakeet and the cockatiels to mimic some whistles. And they're very lovey. Not the one I have right now, but they like to, like, play in my hair and sit on my shoulder. And they would take naps on us and... let us scratch their necks.
Are birds the primary pet that you've had? Or now that you have a house and everything and a husband and, you know, a nice family and everything, do you have cats and dogs?
We've had dogs. Unfortunately, our last two dogs got put down within 6 months of each other just this past winter and spring.
Aww.
So we are currently dogless, which is really hard. And we keep talking about if we're going to get more dogs. But we like to travel a lot, and it's kind of easier to do that if you don't have dogs. So we're trying to be dogless for a little while, but it's really hard.
When you go traveling and everything, do you have someone take care of the birds, or are birds pretty self-sufficient?
Well, birds can be self-sufficient, but they do need to have some company, or they get kind of stir-crazy and, you know, stuff. So, and this bird, actually, the reason why we have this bird is that it was... like I said, it was at an elementary school, and it got left over spring break, and the custodians had promised to take care of her and her family. She had a family, and that didn't happen. And at the end of the week, my friend and her teacher friends got back to school, and there was one bird left. They hadn't fed them or given them water or anything. And so that's why Darwin is named Darwin, because she is a survivor. She is, you know, it's the survival of the fittest and all that, so...
and apparently Darwin survived this one.
Yes. So we are a little concerned about leaving her alone for too long. Like, we'll leave her for a couple of nights, but we don't want her to have, like, PTSD and, like, end up with birdie problems. That would be bad.
So I'm assuming then, because you recently just went on a more than a couple night trip.
Yes. So we had a house sitter who kept Darwin company.
So you went up to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Minnesota, eh?
What? Why Minnesota? I'm curious.
Okay, so my husband is from Minnesota. He grew up in Duluth, way up north. If you go north and you hit Lake Superior, that's where Duluth is in Minnesota. And I went to school in Ashland, Wisconsin, which is also right on the shores of Lake Superior. And then I got my graduate degree in Duluth at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and we met in Duluth. So, yay, Duluth.
So the summer trip here was kind of like a homecoming kind of thing, going back home for a bit?
It was my husband's high school reunion. I don't know if he cares if I tell you which one. It was his 30th. So there, it's out there. It was his 30th high school reunion. So he and his friends all got together, and then we stayed some extra time and went hiking. We did some shopping because there's no tax on clothes in Minnesota. We ate a lot of food. I drank way too much.
Don't we all, when we're on vacation?
It's so much harder. Minnesota and Wisconsin, and probably the Dakotas, it seems like those northern states, they're very, there's a lot of bars. There's a lot of alcohol there, and it's hard for me to go back and not be like, oh, yeah, I'll have one. Because plus they make, like, there's regional drinks that you can get in different places, you know, where if you go somewhere and, you know, you order, what's something I drink up there? Like, if I was to order a Colorado Bulldog in a lot of other places of the country, they would just blink at me. But there I can order one, and they're like, yeah, and they just go whip it up, and they give it to me. It's awesome.
How was the reunion?
It was good. He graduated with a really small class of people. He went to a private school, so there weren't a ton of people in his class. So it was a nice small gathering. I got to meet a couple new people and see some old friends, and he got to see all his old friends. So it was fun. They always do the thing where, like, the first night it's only classmates, and then the second night the spouses are invited to join. So, yeah. So I got some alone time, too, which was also nice.
No matter how long you're married to someone, there are times where you're just like, look, I need a break and need to be alone for a night or two, you know.
Yeah, plus I got to eat weird food that he wouldn't usually eat. Like, I got duck pizza.
Ooh.
And smoked lake trout.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know how it is up there. With you get the panfish going in the muskies there, you know.
Oh, and let me tell you, there is nothing better than smoked lake trout. It's even better, I think, than salmon. If you like smoked fish, there's some damn good smoked fish up there.
Did you go to a meat raffle while you were in Minnesota?
No. You know what's funny is that Paul's family, and I, most of my friends and family in Duluth are Paul's friends and family in Duluth because I met him pretty early on living there. And none of them belong to any clubs or anything. So I had never heard of meat raffles until I lived in Illinois, where we had friends who actually belonged to clubs that had things like that. So they probably do. They do things like, we have friends up there that have farms. So, like, they have mass chicken killing parties and hog killing parties. So it's not so much the meat raffle as it is you go to somebody's house and they kill a large amount or a large animal and,
just have a feast.
Yes. Smelting is also like that. Smelt is like a tiny fish, like a sardine. Mm-hmm. And they come in to the shallows of Lake Superior in the spring. And people just go out and they collect them in nets and then they smoke them on the beach. And then you just eat tons and tons of small smoked fishes.
I got to explore Minnesota more. I've only been there once, and that was for AWP like 2 years ago.
Yeah. And you were in the city part.
Yeah, not out in the country.
No, and there's lakes and, you know, hiking and stuff there in the cities. There's actually a lot. But when you get north of the cities, it's just woods. It's just woods and little farms, and it's really awesome. I love it there.
I encourage our listeners to go out and check out what a meat raffle is, because they're kind of a regional thing, and they're so, they are exactly what they say they are. They're meat raffles.
Yes, you get a ticket, you pay money, and you get your ticket, and then it's usually like a turkey or a ham, or like it's usually a lot. So you're not like just bidding on like a pound of hamburger. It's a package, you know, either a large piece of meat or a package of meats.
Exactly.
They're fun. It's very Midwestern, kind of like what is it, Manhattans and Cosmopolitans. Midwesterners love cocktails like that.
It's fascinating.
Yes. If you need to start somewhere, check your local like VFW post or the local Moose Lodge. Those kinds of places usually are good for meat raffles.
I learned about it from Mystery Science Theater 3000, Riff Tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently Mike Nelson, who runs Riff Tracks, is obsessed with the meat raffles.
I did not know that.
When they did the reunion special last month, after the show, they did a meat raffle for a number of people who had kicked in on the Kickstarter.
That's funny. They are Midwesterners, though. The MST3K folks are all. That's where you get that crazy sense of humor, I think, is the Midwestern. You get stuck inside in the winter like that, and you come up with weird stuff to keep yourself occupied.
I'm told that Minneapolis has become like one of the real hotbeds of comics in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and zines and independent bookstores there.
There's something about it. Minnesota's just like an arts thriving state.
Yes. Yes, it is. There's just, I don't know, there's so much there to choose from. Like, if you're a writer, there's tons of writers. If you want to, like, tattoo artists are doing really well there. Regular artists are doing well there. Booksellers are doing well. It's pretty cool.
We take Minnesota for granted.
Yes. That's okay. If too many people go there, it's going to get all spoiled. So, you know.
Yeah, let's keep the hipsters out of there. They've invaded too many other places.
Oh, my God. There's so many. There's so many.
Keep them out of Minnesota, please. I have to ask about the reunion because my 20th is coming up next year, and I really don't know how to feel about that.
About the age of, like, that it's your 20th or just the reunion in general?
Just the reunion in general, because I did not have a good relationship with my high school world.
No, I didn't either. I've never been to any of my reunions.
I went to my 10th, but I'm really not going to go to my 20th, and also, what's the point of a reunion in the age of social media?
You know, okay, so this is, I know with my husband's class, like, there's a lot of them that are not connected technologically through Facebook and LinkedIn and all that. So for them to kind of get face-to-face, they actually saw people that they don't communicate with very often. And it's different meeting people face-to-face than meeting them through whatever cyberspace you can meet through. I think there's something about being with somebody and having a conversation with a lot of people that's different than just, you know, typing things in on Facebook comments. Or I graduated with close to 1,000 people out of high school, and I did not really have any good, you know, people that I stayed in touch with after high school. So I haven't paid much attention to reunions. I've never been to one. Yeah, and the friends that I'm friends with on Facebook wouldn't go. Like, they would be like, yeah, I'm not going either. So it's kind of, I get excused, so I have a pass from that. And then my college friends, we all get together usually once a year at somebody's house for a party or something. So it's kind of like, well, why go, you know, to this specific place and have to do all this planning when we're already getting together?
Exactly.
Yep. So I've never done the reunion thing. Never, ever. Just my husband's.
Totally understand. I'm also going to a 50-year reunion, but that's a little different. That's like thousands of people, and it's not a school, but it was a philosophy that kind of bound us all together.
Oh, you're not 50.
No.
So it's older than you.
It's okay. Much older than me.
I was going to say, you. I've seen pictures of you, Scott, and I've met you a couple of times. You hide your age quite well.
When did we meet? I don't recall.
I think we met at AWP.
We probably, yeah, I would think we would.
You know, it's one of those things where you're with thousands of people, and then you meet somebody that you've talked to like twice or three times online. You go, oh, it's so nice to meet you. This is so cool. And then 5 seconds later, you're like, oh my gosh, another person. And so it was kind of like that.
I know how that is. My wife is pretty popular in the writing community.
Yes.
And we'll go to AWP. And for the first few times I went, it was basically she would bring me around and be like, so this is so-and-so. You got to meet them. I was like, hi. Yep.
I don't have that problem. I can stay pretty anonymous. But I think that that's how it worked. That, like, we were like, oh, hi. Yeah, we met you a couple of times. And then, you know, you just forget because, yeah.
No offense. No offense.
None taken, and I hope none given.
I hope not either, because I can't name anyone I've met through the show or through AWP or anything. Let me rephrase this as a question. Do you have any, you don't have to name them, but do you have any literary enemies?
I don't think so. I mean, there's people that I don't care for that I try to avoid, but I don't think of them as enemies. I would hope I'm not, and I would hope on the other side of that people don't see me as an enemy. It's funny, there's some people that compete with me. And I didn't realize that we were competing until later. You know, I had known these people for a while, and then I realized, oh, they're like doing everything that I've been doing, and kind of like following me along. And I realized, oh, they're not doing it in like a friendly way. Like, oh, you just got published in this journal. I love that journal. I'm going to send to it too. It was like this creepy, like, oh, she's sending work out. I'm going to send work out. And then I'm going to tell her how many poems I've had published this year. And weird stuff like that. So I don't think of them as enemies. They're kind of annoying, but I just don't pay any attention.
Yeah, I try not to make enemies.
No, I don't either. I mean, if somebody's really mean to me or something, or somebody's just an asshole, then, you know, I'm just going to avoid them. But I don't think of people like, whoa, how can I ruin their writing career? They are such little peons and squibs. I don't want anything to do with them, and they should be erased.
I can name a
world.
I can name a few people like that.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's a waste of energy. Like, any time that you are spending energy and time trying to make other people miserable, you're just wasting your time. You're making yourself more miserable than you are them.
Totally agree. What's the point, you know?
You know, when I was a kid, I used to live for making my mother miserable. Like, I was a very weird child, but I was like, oh, this'll piss her off. And then I came to realize as an adult, like, all those things that I did that I thought were, you know, messing her up were actually doing way more to mess me up.
Every Mother and Father's Day, I apologize to the parent. Still to this day, I'm like, I did not know what I was like. I'm sorry.
I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah, you don't have a whole lot of self-realization when you're a child to be able, you know, it's only as an adult that you can go back and look at that and analyze it.
Hence the mother's curse of, I hope you have children just like you.
Yes, although mine got worse than it was, I hope you have children just like your sister. So... This is why I don't have children.
Dare I ask what was, you know, why that curse was so specific? Or is that a question for another day?
Okay. We've established that I was kind of a pain in the ass as a child. My sister is awesome, but she's always been a little indecisive, and she was just more, I don't want to say more work. I think for my parents, she was more of a struggle than I was. When I was punished, I would feel bad, or I would, you know, and Alicia just didn't, she didn't give a crap. So, yeah. So it turned, once Alicia was older, it turned, and there's 5 years between us. It turned from, yeah, I hope your children are just like you, to, I hope your children are just like your sister.
Is she your only sibling?
She is. And she's awesome. I should clarify that she is an awesome, awesome person, and I love her very much. But when we were children, we were far enough apart in age that I was more annoyed by her than anything. And she was too little to really participate in things the way I did. And it always seemed like she was tagging along. And yeah.
Saw you as the role model and you rejected that label.
Yeah. And my mom was, I mean, that's one of the things my mom would always say is, you know, well, your sister just loves you and she just looks up to you and she wants to be like you. But to, you know, to a 10-year-old, a 5-year-old wanting to be like you is annoying. Like, get out of my space. Why are you touching my stuff? You're messing everything up. Go away.
Must have gotten even worse when you were 15 and 10.
You know, by then it wasn't so bad. By then she had her things that she was doing. She didn't so much want to be like me anymore. She had her own stuff. And I was in high school, so I had my own stuff. So it actually, as we got older, it was a lot.
You guys grew up in Wisconsin?
No, we grew up in Tucson, Arizona. And then I went to college in Wisconsin.
So okay.
Very far away from home for college.
I think that you're the first guest we've ever had that's from Arizona.
Oh, yay, Arizona. I loved it. I liked growing up surrounded. Tucson is surrounded on three sides by mountains. So there's a lot of mountains. We did a lot of camping and hiking and outdoor stuff. So I got to be outside a lot. It's beautiful. It's hot. But when you know, it's like when you grow up with anything that you're just kind of used to it. So it was just hot in the summer and you just dealt with that. Plus, you know, you get to go swimming and spend time in the pool all summer, which was fun.
Then you were okay with, did the heat wave hit Minnesota while you were traveling?
Oh my God. Yeah, it did. So the last night we were in Duluth was Thursday night, and the neighborhood that we were staying with friends had a huge storm come through in the middle of the night and knocked down hundreds of trees and knocked down tens, you know, like dozens of power lines and lights. So the day after the storm, they had a high of 95 and all these people without power.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's one thing. Most of the houses up there don't have air conditioning because heat waves are pretty rare. But to not have air conditioning and have, like, you can't open your refrigerator or your freezer and you've got to actually find places to move your food to so it won't spoil. And then there's no fans. There's, you know, you couldn't have anything. And they also knocked out, part of the power knocked out the sewage pumps. So they were telling people, you know, don't shower, don't flush your toilet more than you have to. So you add that into a heat wave, and that's always, you know, that's fun. You can't shower and you can't flush your toilet.
And you can't go to a restaurant for, you know, 20 minutes of air conditioning or something.
No. In fact, people were driving up to an hour away to get generators because all the generators ended up getting, you know, sold out. They're in town and there's still people. So this is what, almost a week on, and there's still some people without power.
Oof.
So we left and we went down to the cities, to Minneapolis, and went to the Mall of America, which is air conditioned, and hung out in the air conditioning before we went home.
That was one of the sites I didn't get to see in Minneapolis. And that's the problem with AWP. You don't have much tourist time.
No, with conferences like that, you do not have much time for sightseeing. I mean, the nice thing about where it was in Minneapolis, it was close to like the art museum and the history museum, but to go all the way out to the Mall of America, that's a hoof. It's a bit of a hoof. But you know, it's just American consumerism at its greatest. It is amazing and it's confusing. It's set up by the four cardinal directions. So there's a north, south, east, west wing. But each of those wings, like every single one has a Caribou Coffee and every single one has a Bath and Body Works and every single one has, you know, like a Victoria's Secret on one of the three levels. And so you get very confused as to where you are. Like, wait, we're passing another Caribou Coffee. Where the hell are we?
Was Camp Snoopy still there or is that gone?
Not Camp Snoopy anymore. Now it's Nickelodeon Land or something. So All the rides are themed around Nickelodeon shows, but there's, what, like four roller coasters, I think, and a flume ride, and all your traditional carnival rides.
Yeesh.
Yes, it's pretty amazing. So, and they pack a lot of roller coasters into that space.
I can't even conceive of this place, to be honest.
It is something to behold. It's pretty amazing. And it has a huge aquarium that you can visit. There's Legoland. There's another museum thing there that I'm not going to think of. And then adjacent to it, when they first built the mall, it was kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And now there's all these hotels and water parks and a huge IKEA. So it's not just the mall anymore. Now it's like the mall and all this other stuff.
It's like its own resort area.
It is. Oh, it's got a huge movie theater and there's nightclubs and restaurants and... Yeah, you can go there and like spend, there's people who go and spend a weekend there, you know, with all the things that there are for kids to do between the museums and the water parks and the amusement park. And
it's like the Disney of the Midwest.
It is, kind of, with shopping.
Yeah, a lot more shopping.
A lot, yes, lots and lots of shopping. And pretty much all, like, there's a Sears there. The Sears has been an anchor store for a long time. So you can go to Sears and there's a Nordstrom. So you can get everything from like your bargain shopping things to, I happened to look at a purse at Nordstrom and asked my husband, I was like, what do you think? How much do you think it costs? Do you think it's like 500, 600? What do you think? He's like, I don't know. Like he guessed like 700. And I looked at the tag on and it was like $1,750 for a purse. So what? You can get, yeah.
What justifies that?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, that's like a house and a car payment.
Did it come with, like, free diamonds or...
No, know? I think it may have come with a small child to carry it around for you, but why you would want a small child to carry around a purse that's that valuable, I don't know. I think I would have to sell... How many books would I have to sell to be able to afford that purse? It would be a lot.
A lot more than we can conceive.
Yes. Yeah, I'm thinking, like, with... Yeah. That is many books of poetry in that purse. Maybe that's what I would do. I'd get that purse and then I would carry around my little square reader and three extra copies of my books to sell to whomever I met.
Help me justify this purchase.
I wouldn't put any pens in it, though, because you wouldn't want the inside to get dirty.
No, you'd almost want to put it in, like, a plexiglass box.
I don't know. So that's the kind of consumerism that you can get at the Mall of America.
So you left Arizona and went to Wisconsin then for college.
Yes.
Why Wisconsin? Like, you know, it seems like such a drastic shift.
It is. That's exactly what I wanted. I wanted to try something that I hadn't done before, and I wanted to go far away from home. And so I went there, sight unseen. I saw brochures of the college that I attended. I didn't visit before I went. I had a lot of phone conversations with students. Like, they recruited me pretty heavily. So some students would call me and talk to me about the campus. But I loved it. I had never been somewhere that green. I had never seen fall colors before. I had never seen that much snow. I ended up with walking pneumonia my first winter because my body just couldn't quite adjust to the cold weather and all the wet and snow and everything. But I loved it. I really did love it. And I have this romantic notion of winter, even still, because I've never had to really shovel a lot of snow or deal with, I didn't grow up as a child with somebody handing me a shovel and saying, go clear the driveway. So I have this, like, notion of it being sweet and beautiful.
Probably very different for your husband then.
Yes. Oh, he hates it. He gets annoyed. So, the first snowfall, I think everybody thinks is pretty nice, and you have to shovel it, or it melts, and it gets dirty, or it gets icy, or whatever.
Yeah, first snowfall, holiday snowfall, that's nice.
Yes, yeah, the March snowfall, when you've been dealing with it for that many months, that's not fun anymore. It's just like, oh, come on, come on!
I will never forget that when I got my bachelor's degree in New York, graduation was in May, and we had a freak flurry that morning. Snow flurry that morning.
Oh, that's not uncommon in Duluth. There's still usually into May in the woods, there's still snow on the ground where it's shady.
Is that part of the reason, though, you've stayed kind of north and away from the desert areas, settled in the Chicago area and such, is because of that?
No, I think that's because of work. So we've gone where work has been.
But you're not complaining necessarily.
But no, I'm not. No, I'm not. I like Chicago a lot. I don't deal with heat very well. So the same way my husband does not like winter, like if you tell me, oh, it's 115 degrees, I don't give a crap that it's a dry heat. It still hurts to breathe. You still can't go outside and do things because it's too damn hot.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, it's kind of funny because my feelings about heat are, on one extreme and his feelings about cold and winter are on the other. So where we live now is actually pretty nice. Spring comes to Chicago about a month earlier than it does up in northern Wisconsin, Minnesota. The fall comes a little bit later, so the summer's a little bit longer. It's a bit more temperate. It can, so it's a decent compromise here. We get all four seasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he would love to live in Arizona and I would love to live up in northern Minnesota, and neither of those things is going to happen.
So this is the closest you're going to get to a compromise climate.
Pretty much. Yeah, I think so. And I think, like, we've talked about, like, when we retire, where we might want to live, and I could see us moving a little farther south, like center of the country, but I don't think I would ever live in the south, like Florida or Georgia or Texas.
Yeah, the heat is, you talk of the dry heat, we have the wet heat.
Yeah, oh my God. And we have that here sometimes too. We've had it with this heat snap that's come in and it's been, you know, 90 degrees with 70% dew point. You walk outside and you're wet.
I got up this morning to go to work early today, and I'm not kidding, at 8 o'clock we had 98% humidity.
Ooh! Like, just throw a blanket on me! Just throw a big wet blanket on me. It is good for your skin, though. Keeps you hydrated, you know.
That's true. I went up north for summer vacation and back to my old hometown, and within a week, I'm like, I need, like, moisturizer. We do have aggressive air conditioning, which helps to mitigate the pain.
Yes. Air conditioning helps a lot of things. Heat, cold, keeping it, you know, dry inside so that you don't have mold everywhere.
Hopefully.
I don't know how people did it before electricity and air conditioning and all these things that we have. Like, I just can't imagine, like, in the 1800s, living in Florida and wearing, like, long pants and petticoats and a corset. And a, you know, a long sleeve shirt and a jacket, like yuck.
And there was no weather service to track storms coming in. So you're outside having a picnic and 5 minutes later it's a downpour.
Yeah. I guess people then maybe were more attuned to some of that, but still, I mean, I just can't, how did they cook? Like, you know, you can't, they had no refrigerators.
A heat, you know, you come in after being out in the afternoon, and you come home, you're like, I am not cooking tonight.
No, I know. I'm going to go to Applebee's. Bye. There's no Applebee's. Well, and then, I know some people had servants who could do the cooking for them, or you had an outdoor kitchen. But still, who wants to sit over a fire outside when it's 85 degrees out and humid and you're wearing all these clothes? Because society says you have to wear all these clothes.
Exactly.
No. So, yeah. Ugh. Ugh. So God bless those people of the past. I don't know how you would do it.
Yeah, hats off to them.
Yes.
So when the fall comes around, though, that's an awesome time. I love the fall. That's when you get out the cooking.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That is when you bake and you have casseroles and roast meat.
Do you do much? Do you do much baking?
I do. I actually baked a pie this morning.
Ooh.
That's my rule, though. If I'm going to bake something, it's got to be early in the morning so that the house cools off.
What type of pie?
It's a peach pie. And I left out, a friend of mine in Minnesota gave us, they have a small farm and they had a huge amount of lard. And she gave me probably about 5 or 6 pounds of lard. So I made my first lard pie crust and I can't wait to taste it.
Oh,
very excited.
It's cooling right now.
It is. It's on the counter, sitting in all of its peachy prettiness. Very excited.
That will be dessert tonight.
It will be. Yes. Hopefully nobody dips into it before then.
We're looking at you, Darwin.
Yeah, I know. Stay out of the pie, Bird and Paul, out of the pie. So yeah, so nice homemade crust and pie. So yeah, I love baking. Baking is good.
Is baking something you picked up in the last, you know, few years, or is that something that's just always kind of been with you in one way or another?
My mom baked. I'm trying to think of what my mom would bake. She baked. We always had things like cake and cookies and, you know, kind of snacky things in the wintertime, brownies and stuff. And then when I got my own place, I started doing bread and... Then when I got married and we had friends that we could cook for and take things to potlucks and stuff, more Midwest goodness, I started baking even more. Now I'm trying to think. I started doing pies, a lot of pie baking, probably since we've moved here. So probably about 13 years that I've been baking lots of pies.
What is your favorite type of pie?
My favorite kind of pie. If it's a frozen pie, there's a pie that my mom used to make when I was little called grasshopper pie, which is basically like the drink, but it's frozen in a chocolate cookie crust.
Ooh.
That's my favorite frozen pie. My favorite fruit pie, probably, oh, it's so hard because they're all so good. I make cherry pie is really good. I'm not a huge fan of apple, like just plain apple pie. doesn't turn me on. But like an apple cranberry pie.
Straight apple. Too boring. Too plain.
Yes. Yes. But apple cranberry with a nice crunchy topping on it. That's good. Peach pie is good. Blueberry pie is so good. I love blueberry pie with ice cream. A la mode. And in the springtime when rhubarb's up, strawberry rhubarb pie is very good. Oh.
Can't remember the last time I had rhubarb.
Oh. I have a whole bunch in my freezer. Should I send you some?
Maybe. My grandmother used to have rhubarb plants at her house, and there was rhubarb there every year, but I can't remember. It probably when I was a kid was the last time I actually ate rhubarb.
Like raw rhubarb?
Rhubarb in general, I'm guessing. I don't remember having it raw, but...
I wouldn't recommend that, just myself. I'm not a big fan of sour, so eating just raw rhubarb sounds... But yeah, I've made strawberry rhubarb jam and rhubarb sauce and strawberry rhubarb pie and rhubarb coffee cake.
Ooh.
Yeah. There's... Hello. Yes, I know you... Hello. Darwin is ringing her bell to get my attention because she feels like she's not being paid enough attention to.
Oh.
I know. And she doesn't like to eat people food very much. Sometimes birds like love people food. My sister has a parrot and it loves ice cream. Darwin is not a big fan of people food, so I don't know why she's having a fit right now while we're talking about baking. It's kind of weird.
I don't know. Maybe she wants to get into that peach pie after all.
Maybe she just wants to go and destroy it and turn it into small bits of things like birds do.
Make a little nest inside of it, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, nice, warm, moist pie nest.
So the fall then must be amazing in your house in terms of smells with the baking.
Oh, yes, between the baking and the other cooking, because once it's fall... and I'm willing to turn on the oven, like, in the afternoon or the evening. Make all sorts of casseroles. You make chili and French beef stew and biscuits and cornbread and...
It's hard being in Florida because I never want to eat chili down here.
Yeah, I don't recall, like, being terribly excited about chili when I lived in Arizona unless it was wintertime. And it's funny, now, like, I'll make chicken tortilla soup or something in the summer because it's easy. And I do a lot of canning. And when I can salsa, there's always all this liquid that's left once you've taken all the, you know, the vegetables out and put it in the jars. So I can the liquid that's left over and then I use it for stock for chicken tortilla soup. And my husband is always like, oh, it's too hot to eat soup. But I'm not sure that soup is, like, a whole lot hotter than... a lot of other things, but evidently it is.
Chili goes best in cold weather.
It is. It's a good football food. There's nothing better than sitting down to watch a football game with a hunk of cornbread and chili with cheese on top of it and having that and then at the second half of the football game taking a nice nap.
Well, I can relate to the nap. As a Buffalo Bills fan, I just kind of want to close my eyes and walk away sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes a nap is a good way to go. You just kind of, when the game's not going so well, you take a nap and maybe you sleep through the whole second half. You don't even have to watch them lose. You just hear about it on the news later.
Either that or just curl up inside a whiskey bottle.
There you go.
All I got when it comes to my team.
Blankets are also good for that. Put a blanket on. Blanket, whiskey, chili, nap.
Are you a big sports fan?
I don't think I'm a big sports fan, but I'm married... a sports writer. My husband used to be a sports journalist, so it was one of those like beat 'em or join 'em, and there was no way that I was going to get him to stop watching sports. So like, well, if we're gonna watch sports, I'm gonna learn about sports. So I know things about football and hockey and baseball and a little bit about basketball. And what's nice now is that I know enough of the rules that I can ask ridiculous questions and annoy him, or I can...
on purpose.
Or I can critique things and annoy him. And he'll be like, but that's just not how it is. Like, I don't understand why in baseball you can't throw the ball at the runner to get them out.
You know, I've wondered that too.
It's a moving target. I think that that's harder than throwing to the base where, you know, the baseman is on the base. He is a stationary thing that you're aiming at. I think it would be way harder to throw the ball at somebody and hit them while they're in motion. And he just gets annoyed and just shakes his head at me. So things like that.
One thing that I always find fascinating in marriages is the transference of life and such, like, you know, he brings sports into your relationship. What do you feel like you've brought to his?
He is not a poet. So I think I've brought poetry. He has a greater understanding of poetry and he goes to poetry readings with me voluntarily, which is kind of cool. So there's that. Food. I mean, I feed him a lot. So there's that. Probably some artsy things, just a different perspective. I think the male-female thing has, he grew up with brothers where I grew up with a sister. So there's been a lot of things that we've learned from each other just from the different ways that we grew up and the genders that we grew up dominated by or with. So that's been, I think there's that. Yeah.
Because I often wonder, it's like, you know, my wife has brought so much into my world that I didn't know about. And I often wonder, I'm like, what did I really bring to her world?
I got football and hockey and man stuff.
Well, she grew up an LSU fan, so I couldn't bring football into her world. She knew it better than I did.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and I didn't grow up with football at all, so I had no idea. Like, I seriously thought with football, like, every game, it should just depend on who had the ball first. Like, you get the ball, you go down, and you score. Then the other team gets the ball, and they go down, and they score. That's how I thought football worked for a long time. My husband was, what? No. I didn't realize it was, like, basketball. Because, like, I knew things about basketball when we met. Like, sometimes you go down, and you shoot, and you miss the basket, and the other team rebounds, and they go back to the other side of the court. I didn't realize football was like that.
While you're in Minnesota, did you do any readings?
I didn't, you know, I was thinking about that. It's hard when we go back because there's so many things that we want to fit in. It's like, oh, we have to see this person. We have to go to this place. So it's sometimes it's kind of hard to plan in advance a whole bunch of stuff. So I didn't, but I really need to do that. And there's some good literary communities there. And we have family that own and friends that own businesses where, excuse me, where I could have done a reading or something, but I never have up there.
Maybe something to look into for, you know, maybe 2017.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be a good idea. So yeah, no, next year I'm planning more. Although I don't know that my husband knows that we're going to go back next summer, but you know,
it's still possible. You never know.
It is. It's only a day's drive. It's not that bad.
Not that bad at all. It's like from here to Sundress is about one day's travel, so
that's about how far. Yeah, that's a little bit longer of a drive, in fact, but it's still very doable. And my mom lives in North Carolina. In fact, my mom is driving here to visit today, so she is on the road from North Carolina up here, and she will go through Knoxville on the way. So, yay!
I think in a few days with family.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I think she doesn't know this yet, but I think we're going to go to an estate sale and look at some antiques.
Ooh.
I'm going to make her cook with me. I think I made her aware of that. I don't think she's aware that I have some other projects for her.
Keeping her busy.
Yes. Well, and she can help with things. So she's way better at designing things than I am. And I have a Build-A-Bear. I don't know if listeners know what Build-A-Bear is. It's part of the American consumerism where, you know, you buy a teddy bear and then you have to buy clothes for it. And I really got into the last Star Wars movie.
From what I know on social media, particularly BB-8.
Love BB-8. I love BB-8. BB-8 is my favorite. I have two BB-8s. I don't have the little remote controlled one that you can control with your phone, but my house is carpeted, so that probably wouldn't work anyway. They supposedly work better on hard surfaces. But I love BB-8. BB-8 is the bomb. And because BB-8 is the bomb, his friend, Rey, is also the bomb. And I have a Build-A-Bear, and she got in. I'm sorry, my Build-A-Bear has a personality.
It's okay.
does a voice and things, but she got very into Rey. And since I have these BB-8s that she can also be friends with, she wants to be Opal Rey because her first name is Opal. So I made her a staff like Rey has, but she needs an outfit. And Build-A-Bear does not make Rey outfits because for some reason Disney decided that Rey was not that important. I don't know if you remember all the hoo-ha about that.
Oh, yes.
Like action figures and costumes and things for Rey, but there were for all the male characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to design her a Rey costume that she can wear. And I'm not as good at, I'm good at sewing, but I'm not very good at designing. So I'm going to have my mom help me design a Rey outfit for her to go with the staff that I made her so that she can then play with the BB-8s and be like all in.
That sounds so kick-ass.
It is. It's pretty awesome. So she will be very excited when she has her outfit.
I'm going to have to start thinking of outfits. Christmas last year, I got a Tom Servo finally. I got to think of some outfits for him.
Pictures of that online. That is so awesome.
There's so many outfits he's worn on the show. I'm like, I really want to get, like, maybe make a tux for him or...
He needs, like, holiday outfits. You should make him, like, a turkey tail that could attach to his backside with a little waddle that could go off of his chin. For Thanksgiving, you might have to send me some measurements. I will make him a tail and a little waddle for Thanksgiving if you would like to turn him into a turkey.
I might consider that. I might consider that. I'm gonna keep watching episodes going, okay, maybe that costume would work.
Yeah. Like, worse, I spent a lot of time making those.
Yeah. He just has the perfect body for little costumes if you watch the show.
Yes, he does. Crow's got too much head and not enough of anything else.
He's got the broad shoulder area, the broad chest area.
Yeah, yeah. A little tougher.
But, I don't know. I'll come up with something. I think, if anything, I just want to get a little bronze plaque beneath him that just quotes one of my favorite lines from him from the episode of EGA. Joel, I'm gonna slap this movie so hard.
I love that show. I really do miss it. I liked watching it.
Well, the new season just got picked up by Netflix, so...
I know! So now I have more Netflix things to watch. Yay!
As if I needed more.
I know. I hardly watch any TV, and then the thought of adding one more thing on is just like, oh god, I barely watch it as it is.
You know, I don't know of anybody who has a clear Netflix queue.
No. No. I don't. I can't imagine how you would. I mean, and even like, I like to watch nature documentaries and take naps to them. So like our queue just has, there's like one after the other after the other. There are so many just nature documentaries that you can take a nap to that it's insane.
Ooh, I can give you a suggestion then.
Sure.
Next month in August, I read what Netflix is getting, and they're getting a whole bunch of what's called slow TV.
Ooh.
And this started in Scandinavia. Are you familiar with slow TV?
I am not. I'm not very familiar with Scandinavia.
The concept is, as opposed to like modern TV, which is very fast-paced, hectic, etc., it's a six-hour train ride, and all it is just gentle shots outside of a train window. Or for Christmas this past year, I think Norway did one that was an eight-hour sled dog cam.
Oh my gosh.
And it wound up at the very end at what looked like to be the North Pole and Santa's workshop.
At the very end.
So they're getting a whole bunch of, like, you know, here's 3 hours of someone knitting.
Okay. This sounds like perfect nap material.
Yep. They're very popular. Very popular.
I wonder if they're going to subtitle them or if it'll, like, if it's somebody, well, I guess if they're knitting, I talk while I knit, so I don't, maybe they won't talk, but.
I don't think there's any talking or even really any music. It's just
the
sound for hours and hours going.
Huh. I will look into this. This sounds interesting.
Kind of like the Yule log on TV at Christmas time, except that it's something different.
Okay. Something that you could keep on and just keep you company while you're doing other things.
Exactly. I'm going to give it a chance myself when it drops next month.
You can just try it, and there's nothing wrong with trying something.
Yeah. One of the biggest lessons I learned in life. I was just talking yesterday to someone about how I grew up in a house where I had Kraft singles for the most part.
Okay.
And until I discovered Brie, I didn't realize there was other cheese out there.
Wow. Brie's, you know, I can see similarities between those two kinds of cheeses, though. They both have like a wrapping on them. They're both very soft and melty. They're both good on a Triscuit.
My favorite thing to do with the Brie is get a French bread, cut it up, put a little olive oil and spice on it, and then Brie and a slice of apple, bake it. Simple and elegant.
Okay, so but you have to try that now with the wrapped American cheese.
I don't know if I can go back. At this point.
That would be interesting, like how they're different and or similar, like in the same recipes or the same foods to like try each of them. And you know those singles, they last forever if they don't get dried out. So you could have some in your fridge and just leave it there for a couple of years. Just when you're having Brie, be like, oh, I'll take out one of these and see how it is.
Do it on accident, you know? Oops.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, they're very, I think those are pretty similar, except for the fake coloring, soft wrappers, melty. Could, well, you know?
Well, in recipes, I may have to get your recipe for chicken tortilla soup.
Oh,
that sounds good.
It's pretty darn yummy. Yes. Although I've also had Erin Elizabeth Smith's chicken tortilla soup, and hers was also quite good. Oh, I don't think you can mess up chicken tortilla soup.
I don't know. I've never tried it, so I may have to get a good recipe for it and give it a shot.
It's one of those things that you can make with a lot of things that are in your fridge already. Like if you have a jar of salsa and you've got some chicken broth and some chicken, you've pretty much got the makings for chicken tortilla soup.
I might have to give that a shot this coming week and just, you know, go for it. But nice. Speaking of going for things, what you got? What do you have coming down the pike? Any new work coming out? Any events coming up for you?
I'm trying to think. I have a reading in Chicago on, I think it's August 18th, whatever that Monday is that's closest to. Is it the 18th or the 15th? I think it's the 15th. Monday, August 15th, I will be at Uncharted Books reading for the Waiting for the Bus. And what else do I have coming up? I think that's it as far as readings go. And then I am guest editing Blue Lyra Review. And I should be done reading for that pretty soon. And then that issue will come out, I think in the winter, I think like in January, the issue that I'm editing will come out. And I'm very excited about that. I have a book review coming out. Like it's all these things that are like around my writing, but they're not quite my writing. I'm trying to finish up my second manuscript and send out work for that. So that's kind of like out, but it's not, it's just going out. So there's nothing coming up with that anytime soon.
But the first manuscript is definitely out there.
It is. What Will Keep Us Alive is out with Sundress. It's available on their website. And that's what I'll be reading from in Chicago on the 15th. And if anybody is interested in like signed copies of it, they can contact me through Facebook or through the Sundress website. Right now, my website is haywire, so I can't send people there, but there are definitely ways to find me. If you want a signed copy, I will fix you up.
It's not hard to find you, Kristen, and it is a delight to find you when people do.
Yay!
Because truly, you are an amazing person to chat with, and it's been a pleasure to have you now 2 hours, technically, with you on the show.
I know. I was actually thinking that we could like try and recreate the last one, like do the Bill and Ted's excellent. No, it's not Bill and Ted. Who was it that? Oh my gosh, there was an Aurora Saturday Night Live thing.
Wayne's World!
Oh my god. Wayne's World, where they would go back in time and do the thing.
I figured though, if we tried that, we would probably fail.
Probably, yes. We would need a script. It would have to be scripted.
Yeah. It's more fun to go spontaneous and see where the conversation goes this time.
Woohoo!
But it is a pleasure nonetheless. And feel free to come back anytime on the show.
Aw, thanks so much, Scott. It's been fun talking to you again.
It's been fun, and hopefully this one took, so.
Yay! All right, I will be listening for it online.
Excellent. Well, you take care, and hope to talk to you soon, Kristen.
All right, bye, Scott.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.